You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Colombia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. This is me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Bogota, Colombia, 2,600 meters closer to the stars. And yes, this is episode 300 of the Colombia Calling podcast. We've reached episode 300. Who would have thought that all those years ago we would have got this far and drawn so many of you in to listening to my voice over the ether, chatting to interesting people doing stuff here or for Colombia. So it's a great thank you and a great big virtual hug to all of you out there who, are routinely tuning in and giving feedback on the Facebook page and on Twitter and so on. It's a real honor to have been able to do this for 300 episodes. And yes, we will keep on going because, of course, this year we won the Best English Language Podcast 2019 and the Latin Podcast Awards. And so, therefore, we have to strive for bigger and for better. And so this episode 300 is a landmark. We'll be talking to Maud Madeline in Cali about her recent project where she and her partner, Andres Montes Zuluaga, have been investigating and indeed going in undercover into the pornographic webcam industry in Colombia. So hear about that in segment three. But right now, I'll leave you in the capable hands and the news report from Colombia reports there in Medellin. So don't go away. Thank you again and stay tuned.
My name is Adrian Osma, and this is the news for Colombia Calling for November 19, 2019. Colombia's government is increasingly tense about swelling support for a national strike set for Thursday. The support for the anti-government protests has grown to such an extent that even Miss Colombia and football fan clubs said they would participate. Conservative allies of President Iván Duque have asked the court to ban the protests. The president has refused to talk to student organizations and indigenous groups who are leading the protests. The government's unease follows the escalation of similar protests in Ecuador, Chile, and Bolivia. Colombia's migration authority said Thursday that it had expelled 11 foreigners accused of wanting to, I quote, infiltrate the strike. Another 11 foreigners are on the authorities' watch list, Migration Chief Christian Kruger said on Friday. Kruger said he is even considering closing the border ahead of the strike to prevent unrest. Air travel to and from Colombia may also be complicated as air traffic controllers are taking part in the strike. Colombia's largest banking conglomerate, Grupo Aval, bribed lawmakers, according to the businessman who allegedly delivered the money. Eduardo Zambrano made the accusations amid an investigation into bribery by Brazilian engineering firm Odebrecht in Colombia. Grupo Aval teamed up with the Brazilians in a successful bid to construct one of the country's largest infrastructure projects, the Ruta del Sol 2. Colombia will need $740 million to deal with mass migration from Venezuela in 2020, according to the United Nations. The money is more than half of the $1.35 billion the UN's Refugee Agency and the International Organization for Migration are seeking to deal with the crisis. The international organizations expect that by the end of 2020, some 2.2 million Venezuelans will have fled to Colombia. Colombia's security forces concealed the killing of three minors and two civilians in a bombing of alleged FARC dissidents in May last year. This bombing took place when former Defense Minister Luis Carlos Villegas was in office. Former Defense Minister Guillermo Botero was forced to resign 2 weeks ago over a similar bombing in August. That's the end of this week's news bulletin. Now back to Colombia Calling with Richard McCall.
And this is segment 3 of the Colombia Calling podcast, episode 300. Can you imagine that? We've made it to 300 episodes. And you'll know now, the moment of truth is here. The people that we are having on this episode 300 is Maud Madeline and her partner Andres. If you are constant listeners to the Colombia Calling podcast, you'll know that Maud was on episode 279 talking about Defiant Reality Theater, something they set up in Tolu, the two of them, and then in Buenaventura, so the other side of the country. But they're now back in Cali and they have such a phenomenal project in the works. And I apologize in advance to my listeners because I really don't know a lot about this more than what I've read in preparation for this show. So Maud and Andres, welcome back on Colombia Calling, and perhaps tell us a little bit about this quite adventurous show, documentary, that you will be putting on in Cali soon.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for the invitation, Richard, and thank you for having us here. So the show we're premiering next week in Cali on the 15th and 16th of November is called Trojana. And it's a live art documentary that looks at the correlation between sexuality and violence. And the way we've approached these particular themes is that we've gone undercover as webcam models and have started working in the cybersex industry as webcam girl and webcam guy. What we'll be showing on stage at the end of next week is a fragment of this investigation that we've now been carrying out for about 4 months.
So you guys have been investigating this other world of the webcam model industry. Obviously, this is pornography. Obviously, I don't know much about it, but what I read, and I'll have to find the quote and the article, is some 20,000 women in Colombia work in this webcam industry, and that Medellin is the number one city for webcam workers. Cali, number two, Bogota, and then a mishmash, Manizales, and cities after that. So have you infiltrated an actual studio?
So no. We're working from home. We're independent webcam models. We have not infiltrated a studio. And that was for very practical reasons, is because we were working in Buenaventura for the past 3 months. And to our knowledge, there wasn't a webcam studio there. We would love to see how a studio works. We've spoken to studio owners, we've spoken to girls who work in studios, we've spoken to people who train the models in the studios, but we haven't worked from one.
Okay, well, you're in the security of your own home, so there's a lot to be said for that. But tell us a little bit, you interviewed webcam studio owners, so they're obviously talking about all of the benefits that the people working in the industry can have, that they're entrepreneurs, that they're earning cash on the side, that they're looked after, the environment is safe, and then you talk to the let's say the women or the men as well, and do their answers differ?
A little bit, because they're two very different points of view. I mean, the studio owners are, you know, they've invested in this business, and so there's the priority is to not only make that money back, but a profit. That's what's interesting for them. They're investors.
Yeah,
really. We've spoken to studio owners who are also very considerate of the people who work for them, and we, you know, if Like there was one we spoke to, there was one day he was monitoring a conversation that one of the webcam models was having with the client, because that's what they do in a studio. So it's just to, you know, keep, make sure they know what's going on, and then sort of follow the girls in a nice way, not in a creepy, stalky way. And this client asked the girl to do something that even he as a studio owner was like, no, you're not doing that. So, no. And pulled the plug on that conversation. We have heard other stories of girls who have worked in studio, and the option to say no to what a client wants to see is not there. But we haven't spoken to any studio owner who said that would be the case. But we've definitely spoken to girls who have said that.
No, I mean, I get this image. There was a horrible movie with Nicolas Cage about a snuff video, I think, and trafficked women.
Oh, 8mm.
So therefore, it's come into your research, hasn't it? but I think
I actually saw that years ago.
But I think about the murky underworld that maybe this pornography side of things comes into it, and I think of trafficked women. I've got a stereotype, obviously, in my head. Perhaps you can put us straight a little bit about what really goes on. I mean, because obviously you've spoken to considerate studio owners, there must be inconsiderate studio owners as well.
For sure. There are also studio owners that would be very difficult to get to because their business is illegal.
Yeah.
I mean, for all the legal side of things and studios who are registered in Camera di Commercio and they have their publicity out there on social networks and it's very open what they do. I don't even know if anyone could access a figure of how many of them are working illegally. I don't know. In terms of trafficking, we haven't met anyone who found themselves in that position. But again, we haven't had access to any illegal studio. Mm-hmm. And I'm assuming that the conditions there would be very different. There's actually, I think it was last year or 2 years ago, webcam models are now have to pay tax.
Yeah. Well, it's work, I guess.
It is. It's completely, that's what it is. It's work. What the girls don't get in the studios is any kind of job benefit of working. They have very precarious, very precarious contracts. I think in England, it would be like the equivalent of a 0-hour contract.
Yeah. Okay. Now, to infiltrate this, you guys have set up your own accounts. So Andres, has his viewers and Maud, you have your viewers. And it kind of works in, I'd like to say, a social media type of way, as your credibility, let's think of eBay, as your credibility on eBay increases and you've done more sales and you've done more purchases and people review you as being a good client. It kind of works that way, but in a sexual nature, doesn't it? You are a good webcam model, so therefore you get good reviews and therefore your money, your pay increases, I guess, your value increases.
There's definitely something about an increased value. There are characteristics of these platforms that are very social media. So for example, people can follow you so that when you're next online, you can send an email to all of them saying, hey guys, I'm online. So there's this system of following each other. For example, that's very social media-y. In terms of the reviews, so that's not there. That doesn't exist. But there is something that's really interesting in that it's the usernames appear in different colors. And the colors refer to how much money they've spent on the platform in like the past week, or I can't remember all of the categories now, but it's relative to the money that they have spent or not spent. So that when they enter your chat room and you see this color or that color, then you know that that's a user who potentially has money to spend and who has or and who has spent it, or as who has been spending. Not he spent it; he has been spending. So that's how you measure sort of quote unquote the popularity of the users. And then some of the girls on these platforms, I mean, they've got what, like 800,000 followers, or they've got millions of followers on Twitter. They've got, it's huge. It's huge the amount of people that actually appear on these platforms.
And so how are you doing then, Maud, on this one? And how's Andres doing? How many followers do you guys have?
Well, we're still starting out. But it increases every time you broadcast. I think I'm around 85 followers.
Okay.
And Andres hasn't connected to do a show in a little while now, just because we've been busy with the montage of the show and the editing of the videos and just the creating and all of that.
Okay.
So his followers are a bit lower than that.
But 85, I mean, I know of people who call themselves influencers who have less than 85. So, you know, you're doing okay.
It's really bizarre how it works. And the more you connect, the more people find your room, and then the more followers you get. And it just becomes exponential, really. It's just an exponential thing. But you connect to some chat rooms at peak hour or whatever, and they're popular models. There's like 10,000 people connected to that chat room.
10,000 people.
10,000 to one chat room. Because when you log on to the chat room, you can see how many users are there connected. And that's not something you see as a webcam model. That's something you see as a user entering the platform. Mm. And I struggle to imagine what 10,000 people look like. And that's how many are in one chat room.
It's a small town. I mean, that's not what it is. You know, you can think of a small town is watching you.
It is.
And I mean, I just assume people put their credit cards in, and that's how the payment is made. But you're going to correct me on this.
I am. So you put money into your account as a user, and the money that you put is converted into tokens. What's called a token. One token is 5 cents of an American dollar. And that's what they pay the cam girls with. Mm-hmm. So the way they get paid is the users either send, or the clients either send what's called tips. A client blah 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 has tipped 15 tokens, and that you can see in the public chat room. And they can tip as much or as little as they want, and as often as they want. And then they can also ask the girls for a private show, and the private show is charged whatever amount of tokens per minute. Mm-hmm. And that goes from, on the platform we're working from, it's predetermined levels that you can choose. And the lowest one is 6 tokens a minute for a private show. And the highest one, if I'm not mistaken, is 150 tokens a minute.
So the lowest one is like 30 cents a minute.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then all right.
And then the highest one would be, because 100 tokens is $5.
Yeah.
So 150 tokens. Yeah.
Wow. It'd
be like $7.
Yeah. But not a great deal of money, but per minute, I guess. And now this money then, so it's tokens. So it's a cryptocurrency that goes then back into a system, which is then converted into, let's say, physical money and into your banks. It's a pornography cryptocurrency.
That is how it works. That is a really good question. I don't know if it's a cryptocurrency specific to the pornographic industry, but hold on one second. Let me ask Andres, who's just here, because he might know more than I do about this. Because I think it's a fascinating thing to, if it's a cryptocurrency, just for that. Andres, ¿tú sabes de eso? Si los tokens usados en las plataformas webcam son particular a la industria del sexo? Okay, no. Well, but that's a good thread to carry on with the research. That's a really interesting question. Thank you.
It's fascinating. It's fascinating because I find the issue of, I know that, you know, money that's sort of digital and we PayPal and so on, until it's, I take it out of the cash machine, it, you know, I kind of feel that it doesn't exist, you know, when it's floating in the ether and these sort of anonymous payments or what have you. So I just found that really interesting. You know, this potential for, again, see, what we're really talking about here is a gray area between, you know, what is a gig economy and what is a sort of underworld economy and what is, what could be illegal income and illegal income through sort of laundering, I suppose, and so on. But I mean, let's go. Yeah, I think I've gone off on a tangent on this one. Why at the very beginning did you decide to get, you know, why did you guys decide as a couple, this is our next project, Trojana? Why are we going to go into Trojana?
Sure. It's a good question. So this is a project that Andres had started investigating a couple of years ago and that he put sort of in a file because he was then working on other things and going, I'll come back to this one day. Mm-hmm. And he presented the project to me, and I thought it was absolutely fascinating. So I accepted to come on board and co-created with him. Mm-hmm. So when he started the investigation, I think it was about 3 years ago now, it came off the back of a couple of things. First, it was the murder, the very violent femicide of Rosa Elvira Celi in Bogota. I don't know if you want to do a parenthesis just in case, just to refresh memories.
If people don't remember, this was an absolutely abhorrent episode, murder in Bogota in the Parque Nacional some years ago, where I think she was accepting a ride home on a motorcycle with a co-worker or something of that nature, but she was brutalized in every possible way and left in a ravine creek in the Parque Nacional. I mean, it was just awful.
The details of that were awful. I think the most striking one for me is that she was impaled, which was just she didn't recover from that. She passed away after that aggression. So a victim of a femicide. And when that happened, Andres thought, what does someone think when they're doing that to somebody? How does someone, what brings them to take that action? How do their minds work? How does it even occur to them to do that to another person? And he thought, very, very rightly, it's going to be incredibly difficult to speak with sexual aggressors of any kind and for them to tell the truth as it is, because, you know, everyone wants to look good and everyone wants to appear perhaps better than they are. So he thought, do you know what? What about webcam industry, where sexual violence is fantasized and is shared? And these guys are speaking without filter because they're completely anonymous, and there you go. So they just share it. So how about getting to talk to those guys and not letting them know that I'm investigating anything? Just work as a webcam model, put myself in that trade, see what it's like for the girls as well, or for the sex workers in that cyber sex industry, and get access to that information.
Incredible.
That was the sort of genesis of it.
And this violence, because I mean, you're in the right place for it. Violence against women in Colombia is sky high. You know, the figures don't even tell the half of it. I think, I think a lot of internecine violence and abuse is not even reported, especially in the rural areas or let's say more down at heel neighborhoods and so on. So you decided this. Has there been a theme of violence and aggression that you have seen through the chats then, as you are there on the camera?
There have been some. And that is both for me and for Andres.
Yeah.
For the girls, and this is something that the people that we interviewed had told us, there's a very strong pedophilic element to the fantasies, and that is definitely something that we've seen as well.
Yeah.
So we're definitely in the right place. Yeah. In terms of that link between violence and sexuality, we're definitely in the right place, and we're definitely talking to people who have fantasies around that and who are very comfortable sharing them and talking about them. And I wanted to to add something to what you said about the figures. This is the figures that we found as well for the investigation. We're very aware that as high as they already are, they are also only the reported cases. Yep. And when you said, you read that it was about 20,000 people working in the industry, I'm not surprised at all. It's supposedly there are between 5,000 and 6,000 just in Cali.
Yeah, well, that would make sense if it's, higher an increase. And I would imagine substantial increase in Medellin just for the infrastructure around, let's say, this kind of thing. What I want to talk, the experience for yourself, the first time you or Andres decided, well, we're going to sit in front of the camera. How did you feel? Were you just frozen?
There's a lot that's happening between getting used to how the platform works. So people are talking to you on the public chat, and then they're talking to you in the private chat, and then I don't know, you want to put some music on, and then you go to another tab. It's mad, everything that's happening at the same time. So I think that the first time we logged on, there was a sort of a little bit of a rush of adrenaline, because while you're trying to figure all of this out as well, people are watching you. Now, when you start, you obviously don't have 10,000 people connected to your room, so it's quite a small audience. There was something I found surprisingly easy, and that is because you don't see the other people, then they just kind of merge into a sort of blur. Do you know what I mean? So it could be 10 people talking to you at the same time. At the end of the day, you don't know what any of them look like. You don't know what their voices sound like. You just don't know anything. And I don't know if some people forget this, but they're also virtual identities, so anything they say could be that or the complete opposite. They say they're 30, they could be 90 years old, or they could be 12. So knowing that as well, there's a distance that's there. As much as people have said that they like the webcam sexual service because they feel that there's a connection with the girls, because they can talk to them, because they respond, like it feels more human than, say, watching porn. It's a very strange kind of interaction that's almost all based on lies.
Yeah, well, that's it. I mean, and you're kind of tricking yourself into believing that there's a real interaction going on. Well, there is a real interaction, but there's nothing, let's say, a genuine interaction.
Not that I've seen, not that I've seen or that I've experienced. But there are documentaries out there about webcam girls who met up with clients that they had a particular quote unquote relationship with. And this particular documentary, as it stands, it didn't work in real life at all. It only worked in the virtual realm. I think there is a lot of tricking yourself into believing that it's perhaps more than it is. And again, this is one of the questions. It's what's wrong with accepting that it's just a virtual relationship / transaction? Why do we need to make it anything more?
Yeah.
Now, I find this conversation is absolutely fascinating. We talked about studio, let's say, owners having their kind of editors or moderators there, and then, you know, filtering or unplugging. For you, hopefully, Andres is the moderator.
Absolutely. We definitely have each other's backs in the broadcasts, and that's also to help with technical issues. And sometimes I've been on air and I haven't realized that my camera had frozen, and Andres is there from his computer watching the show. And then your camera's frozen, like restart. So in terms of moderating the chats, we're not doing that, because we want to get all of the information. So they can send us literally whatever they want. And we're very happy with that. But we're definitely there for each other when one of us broadcasts and the other one is more on the technical front of things.
Well, I just think also, there's a certain psychology that definitely helps you, knowing that you're supported,
yeah.
Not just in a technological fashion, but, you know, you have one another's backs. And I think perhaps if it were to get uncomfortable, which I'm absolutely certain there have been some uncomfortable moments there, so you're just like, I am not prepared to do that or do this. You can talk with your partner about this, you know, and you can talk yourself, let's say, back from the edge.
Absolutely. That is a very good point. Well, in our cases, you know, we know about this work that we're doing, but we've told our friends that that's what we're doing as well. And we're not saying it as we've done this on an artistic level, because that kind of warps the conversation. Because what we've done is we've started working as sex workers in the cyber sex industry. And it is, we have a huge mm-hmm. network of support of people who know that that's what we're doing. And if anything should become too much at any given point, then there's a lot of people that we can reach out to and tell them it, up to our family members. And the girls who have to keep it all hush hush, I can imagine that would be very difficult, because when you just need to vent and unwind, then to not have a support network to be able to do that is very difficult.
So let's say this. I mean, a fantastic project, fantastic insight that you're giving us to this. How are you putting it on stage? It's a documentary, you say.
Yeah, it's a live art documentary. So on stage, it's a montage. There's a lot of scenic devices that are going to be used. There's obviously Andres and I are on stage. So our bodies are there interacting with the audience, interacting with the scenic devices. There's going to be audio, video. There's also text that we've written. And we've just found different ways of showing this fragment of the investigation that we wanted to share. And there's extracts of interviews. But also, we're going to be broadcasting live from the stage.
Wow.
Yep.
So on each occasion that you are on stage and putting the show on, we'll have the opportunity to see different people interacting. We won't see them, but their conversation. Absolutely. And wow.
Yeah.
So this is going to be a show that's an evolution. I mean, each time it will change.
Absolutely. And the investigation as well is definitely not stopping. I mean, we're tackling sexuality on one hand, violence on the other, and already on their own, each of those subjects is, you know, lifetime worth of studies. We've put them together. So the investigation after this premiere is carrying on, because we've already got dates to present the show next year. So apart from the live element of the live broadcast, which is going to be different every time because it's going to be different people connected to our chat rooms, then the investigation is carrying on as well. So, you know, it might well be that no two shows are ever the same, even up to what part of the archive we present, because we've got so much material.
And in order to keep the show running, in order to keep a certain flow, you guys are going to have to keep on performing.
A certain economic flow.
There's a certain economic flow there, but there's also maintaining, let's say, a viewer, you know, ratio.
That's not a preoccupation that, okay. That's not one of the main preoccupations that we've got. Also part of the reality of being a webcam model is that sometimes you connect and no one talks to you.
Yeah.
And with this kind of ideal, there's this ideal that you'll make millions of dollars and that you've got 10,000 people connected to your room. And some of them do. Some of them do have that, but a lot of them don't.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's quite boring and it's quite lonely. And so if we do whatever happens during the live broadcast on stage is what's meant to happen, because we'll be live from that platform. So whatever happens is a slice of reality of that virtual world.
Crazy. And finally there, not to diminish any of your work or anything, how much have you made economically since you've started?
Well, I'll tell you this. This is the first time I've worked on a show where the tests, or let's say the rehearsals, pay.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you didn't give me the figure.
It's because the reason I don't want to give it is because I don't work as a webcam model like the other girls do, where they connect, Richard, they connect 6 to 8 hours a day, 6 days a week. Like, it's not a part-time hobby job. It's a full-on, full-time job. And that's not how much time I'm online. So if I gave you my figure, I'd have to tell you sort of how much time I've been online. And do you know what I mean? It would just be completely out of context, but know that the girls who do, you know, work as cam girls, most of them, it's a full-time 6 day a week, 8 hours a day job.
It's just a I know, a whole nother world. There's a whole different era of everything today. I just sound like an old guy. I just don't understand. I just don't. Whatever happened to going inviting someone out for a meal? I don't know. Or maybe I guess you want to get round that, don't you? I suppose.
Whatever happened,
I don't
know. Happened to calling landline.
Calling someone on a landline. Well, you know, and I just sort of wanted to say at the end, you know, that some of the propositions, I suppose, you get, and are not, you know, we're not talking Byronic poetry.
No,
not at all.
But do you know what? This is also very surprising. You get some very crude people. I don't know how crude I can be on this podcast.
No, not at all. You can say a little something, not too much.
No, it's too crude. So some people come in and they're super crude, but others come in and they literally want a chat. And I've had people pay for a private show, and the first hour of that private show was chatting, and it wasn't dirty talk. That's the point I needed to make. It wasn't dirty talk an hour. It was literally chatting about their job and about the weather where they are and just chatting. So you also have, you know, all of that spectrum of people out there. But yes, some of them come in all guns blazing with some, you know, very poetic gifts. And others are more, quote unquote, relaxed.
We don't have enough time to go into this, unfortunately, but I'm more fascinated by those who want to engage in that kind of conversation. So like, as if it were a real conversation without the barrier of the monitor. And, I find that really interesting. And it goes into a lot of what one reads today, and especially this last week in the New York Times, about, and in England, I think there's a minister for loneliness now, because it's becoming an epidemic, this loneliness. I see it as not only could these people be lonely, they could also be family, men, women, and so on. But you are offering some sort of catharsis to people who can't get it elsewhere.
And offering an attention, I suppose.
Yeah.
Which is probably why this guy preferred to pay for a private chat, because when they do that, then, you know, you're only speaking to them. You're not then distracted by other things that are going on in the public chat room. So there's a definite sort of undivided attention for however time you're, however quantity of time you're paying me for. But I do hear what you're saying about it being fascinating, but it is also something to remember, and that these guys are on the platforms too. And ultimately, for however much they want to chat, they're still there to masturbate, get something sexual out of it.
Yeah.
And they might have like a smoother or something that feels a bit less aggressive than the guy who comes in guns blazing, but it's the same. They're looking for the same thing.
And finally, are you? Yeah. I mean, I'm absolutely certain that this murky world, the ones that you have not interviewed, there is a criminal element to it and a trafficking element to it. And I heard that the Oficina de Envigado is in charge of some of these studios, maybe in the town between Cali and Popayan that I'm not going to name, but I think there are places of this nature. You haven't run into any of this, and I hope you don't, because, you know, you're treading on a little bit on the sort of mystique and their economy.
Yes and no. So we haven't come across anything that's been remotely threatening, or we haven't come across anything like that. I think anyone who comes and see the show, and hopefully if they feel threatened by it, then more reason to come. Because what we're trying to do with this show is we want to make visible this sex work industry, and that's not just the webcam one, it's all of the sex work industry, because as long as we can't speak openly about the sex work industry, then we can't speak openly about all of the violence, and that is against women and against the LGBTQ community, that stems from it. And not only that stems, but the sex work industry is super twisted, because it creates and it feeds that violence. So If we want to be able to find solutions to this just incredible violence, I mean, you said it, the figures, and that is just in Colombia, are shocking. If we want to find a way of preventing that, or of making it so that women and the LGBTQ community are not exposed on a daily basis, then we also need to look at where it comes from. And at the minute, none of these things are being talked about, nor the violence, nor the porn. That's what we're doing. Because ultimately, we completely, there is no judgment whatsoever on any sex worker. I know there's a lot of people out there who are abolitionists, of the sex work industry. That's not where we stand. I think we have, especially through the interviews now, but we already had it before, a very clear understanding of why it exists and why people do it. And at the end of the day, you know, people who tell prostitutes that they have no dignity, it's like, well, what is more undignified, working as a sex worker or an employer who offers less than a minimum salary? At the end of the day, who is more undignified person here?
And
shift that focus to where it needs to be. So that's what we're doing with this show, and hopefully no one will feel or attacked or threatened by it, because that's really not why we've done it.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for, you know, letting us in a little bit into your world and this quite fascinating investigation and documentary that you're putting together to put on stage soon in Cali. And I believe then you'll be traveling all around the world on this to you know, illustrate what, you know, I think it's what you, this industry and violence together, isn't it? And where will we be able to see it, in Bogota or in London or elsewhere?
Yes, so in January it's going to Mexico. And then we're hoping to present it in Bogota either February or March next year, and in May, it's going to London, May 2020, it's going to London, and then we've got other dates sort of to be confirmed, but Mexico, yeah. Bogota, and London are signed, sealed, and delivered.
I think that's amazing. I think that's so cool that it's going international, and the conversation, the dialogue is opening up, you know, you guys are at the front of it there. And well, of course, keep us informed, and I'll post the dates and where you're going to be showing on the website, on Facebook and Twitter, so that some of my international viewers might be able to go and you know, participate in the dialogue as well.
Thank you for the support. Yeah, that'd be lovely.
No, you're most welcome. What an excellent, what an interesting conversation about something I know so little about. So we've been talking to Maud Madeline and her partner in the background, Andres Montezuluaga. There we go. And her, who's in the background. Thank you, both of you, for your time and for being so open about this investigation that you're doing. That was episode 300 of the Columbia Calling podcast. Yes, 300, we've reached it, and we will continue to keep on broadcasting. So thank you to Maud Madeline and Andres Montezuluaga. We will be back next week with more people to talk about something Columbia related. Columbia is the lens for all sorts of interesting conversations that we can have here on the podcast. So thank you again, and goodbye.